We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It is our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival. And we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast. Festival for more details.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Yeah. Island. Those days are over now.
I know.
Those days are over. I got kids now. I've got
you ready?
Sensible.
You ready?
You don't need it.
Yep, it's the world's most dangerous morning show, The Breakfast Club. Charlamagne Tha God, Angela Yee. Envy had to step out, but our guy is here, man. You know, fatherhood is kicking his ass, so he has to get back on that road and get this money.
We saw you working out, getting ready for this North
That's
American
right.
tour.
Yeah. You saw that. Yeah.
And Sharon is here. What's up, my brother?
What's going on? Happy to be back.
Mm. How are you, man?
I'm good, yeah, I'm good. I feel like I've only been here a couple of days, so jet lag is actually kicking my ass.
Okay.
I was actually like up at 5 today, so I don't actually feel too bad.
Oh, perfect.
Bad. Yeah, so we're good.
How was fatherhood, man?
It's good, I've got two girls now.
Yeah,
no. Two little girls. It's, yeah, I mean, it's every challenge that everyone says, but it's so rewarding. They're great. And it's lovely seeing them interact. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm just glad that my first daughter now has a mate, you know.
Was she jealous at first?
No. Everyone said that she would be, but no, she wasn't. I think she was just really happy to be a sister, you know?
Yeah, my brother was so jealous when I was born. He's only a year older than me. They had to like keep us separated because he was always sitting on me and he thought I was a dog because we had a dog.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, yeah, my first daughter, she just wants to hug the whole time.
That's
so
sweet.
And my second daughter is 5 months. So sometimes you're like, okay, maybe
stop
don't
hugging
jump
her
on.
So
yeah,
hard.
Yeah.
What's the age difference? I forgot.
I think like 18, maybe 20 months, maybe 21.
See, that's good. Yeah. See, my last three are all like 3 years apart. So 7, 4, and 1, but the oldest is 14. So the age gap is so far. So she's more like a...
How's the one-year-old?
Built
oh, she's amazing. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, she's amazing.
But yeah, totally.
But just I'm glad, like being close in age, you'll see the bond
totally, yeah,
more.
Totally. And I really wanted to do that. Like me and my brother were super close when we were growing up, and there was like exactly 2 years between us as well. You got siblings?
I have an older brother.
Yeah. Justin, you got siblings?
Yeah, I got an older sister and two younger brothers, younger sister.
I enjoy being
Big
the youngest.
Family. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what about this new music? So I saw that you did a little secret show.
Totally.
Right? A small, intimate show.
That was a really emotional show, man. Like really, I've sort of made this album. I had like a bunch of stuff happen at the beginning of the year, and I made an album sort of in and around it. And I hadn't played it to anyone. And then I put this show on. It was for a mental health charity. And I did, you know, like what Chappelle does. You take all the phones and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I played all the songs for the first time. And just, it was really powerful. Like, really. Like, seeing reactions at a charity event like that as well, where it's for a certain thing. And the album's kind of lent into my own sort of struggles with that. And yeah, it was like, it was a really, really good show.
Well, let's talk about it. What was the inspiration for the album?
I had my best friend died in March. Mm-hmm. And it was February the 20th, but as I was heading into a big court case, and then I had another mate die mid court case, and I had some other stuff in my family that was like health issues, and it was just it was one of those things. And you know I've become a problem solver in my friendship group. I'm sure both of you mm-hmm. guys are problem solvers in your friendship groups, and there's just certain things you can't solve. Mm-hmm. And death is one of them, illness is one of them, you know. And it was just I just wrote a record around it, mostly being like cathartic and it being therapeutic for me, because I had no outlet of, because I was basically in a courtroom every single day. Mm-hmm. Being told that I was like a thief and a liar, and I had like no outlet of talking to people, because I couldn't talk to anyone because I was in this case. And so I just wrote a load of songs that ended up being this album that I think will come out next year. But it's the album I've thought the least about. Like, every single album I curate, and I get this is the best song from this week I wrote, and this is the best song this mm-hmm. week, and this is just 14 songs that I wrote in the space of, I think, like a week and a half. And wow. then I spent another week recording them, but I've like not thought about it at all. It's just like, this is how I feel at this time, and that's it.
So it was an album full of grief, basically.
Totally, yeah. Well, grief and like processing, and like, you know, because I felt when my friend died, like the next day, everyone's life resumed as normal, and I was sort of looking around, being like, no, the world has to stop for a bit. You know, mm-hmm. like when the Queen died, the world stopped. Like, I just felt like the world had to stop and just take a moment. So there's a song on there called like Life Goes On, and it's basically just lyrics are easy come hard go, but life goes on, because every like the worst day of your life ends and the next day begins. Mm-hmm. And then it's a totally new day. And I just, it's a lot of processing. Like, I've never been to therapy before, and after all of this started sort of speaking to someone, and it's very, just opens up your heart.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Well, thank you.
Well, how long have you been going?
I started pretty much straight afterwards. When was my first one? June.
Wow. Yeah. How was that first session like?
Horrible, man, because he's talking to a stranger, and you're like, you're saying like the deepest, darkest secrets of like childhood trauma, or like this happened when I was a kid, or like this. And I was, things I haven't spoken to anyone about, and you're telling them to an absolute stranger. Mm-hmm. And then you go, and how are you? And they go, mm-hmm. Because they can't let you into their private life. But yeah, it's been very helpful. Sam Smith said therapy is basically someone coming in and looking at your suitcase and reorganizing it for you. Basically.
Oh yeah, I use the closet example. Yeah. I say therapy is like a therapist coming into your closet. Your closet is junky. They help you organize your closet. You get rid of all of the stuff that you don't want anymore. The stuff you want to keep, you can organize it nice and neat.
But there might be an old jacket that you hate that just has to stay in there because you can't get rid of it. You know, it's just, and it's just there, and you just learn to deal that it's there.
Yeah.
Just kind of put it to the back a little bit.
I love it, man. I love therapy. I go once a week.
Totally. Yeah. It's still quite a like taboo thing in the UK. Everyone I know in America, like I would say 9 out of 10 people do it. But in like even speaking to my friends about it back home, you know, I've sort of mentioned it, and the reaction wasn't like, good for you. It was mm-hmm. like, oh, you're right, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas I think it should be normalized, I think.
And you're right. You are the person that I always see people commenting on how you gave them some great advice when they needed help. You were telling somebody from The Voice that she needs to make sure she calls her parents and speaks to them. And then also I saw another analogy you gave about dirty water.
Yeah. Well, I find like the dirty water thing is actually an analogy I use about lots of things, but it actually started with songwriting, because everyone, all these kids that I meet are like, all of my first songs are so bad, like I'm not going to be a singer. And I was like, do you think that the first song that I wrote was thinking out loud? My first songs that I wrote were so bad. But it's basically, you get into an old house, you turn on a tap and it runs muddy water for a bit, and you get all the muddy water out, and then suddenly it starts running clear water, and every now and then there's a fleck of mud and there's a little bit of dirt and there's this and there's that, but it just keeps flowing. And songwriting's like that, but also like talking about getting your feelings and emotions are like that, because you have to let it start flowing to get to a point. So with songs, every time I write a bad song, it doesn't get me down because I know I've got that bad song out of me, and the next song will hopefully be a good one. But all the songs at the start were dreadful, and you can pull up songs that I wrote when I was like 14 that are on YouTube, and I say it to people all the time because people always say that I was born with natural talent, and I was like, no, it wasn't. I was so bad. I couldn't play guitar. I couldn't sing. I couldn't write songs. You learn to do these things. You put in your hours and you learn to do it. Do you ever go back and listen to like the first radio show you did?
I try not to.
Yeah, exactly.
I have mine.
So when they try to cancel me for things, I act like I don't know what they're talking about. Never heard that before.
No, when I first started in radio, I had no experience. I just went on the air and didn't know what I was doing at all. And yeah.
But you have to start, don't you?
The more comfortable that you get with
that. Yeah, you have to. I feel like with any profession, like anything, you have to dare to suck. Like if you're gonna be an amazing sports player, you have to suck at some point. If you're gonna do anything, you have to be, and also accept failure. Like failure is such a great part like whenever I fail in something, I'm not like, oh man, that's really brought me down. It's just like, okay, what can I learn from this situation, and what's the next thing? And failure just needs to be normalized, because it's so, everything nowadays on social media is just all the successes and the wins, and it's important. Like, people think that I never have flop singles. People just think I only put out hit singles because those are the things that they hear. But there's so many times you put something out and you're like, okay, well that didn't work. So why didn't that work? And what can I do? And it's, yeah.
When's the last time that happened to you? A flop single?
Mate, I've been releasing songs all year. My mantra at the beginning of the year is, you know, in between albums, I'm very much like locked down, closed. Mm-hmm. I'm writing. And I people come to me all the time and they ask to do collaborations. And at the beginning of the year, I just said, right, for the entire year, I'm going to say yes. Mm-hmm. I'm just, anyone that asks me, I'm going to say yes and see what happens. And I'd say like 3 out of 10 have like really worked. And then like the other 7 are like kind of worked. But on this type of scale that people expect from me, you might say that they haven't worked. But
yeah, the bar is higher for you.
Totally. But in my mind, I was just like, I'm just saying yes to everything. And I know it's going to be good because I'm going to make sure it's good. But also like whatever happens, happens. And some have like, I did an Afrobeat song with an artist called Fireboy DML.
Oh, yeah.
And it's ended up being it's the biggest selling collaboration in England this year. It's the second biggest selling song of the year. I think it's the biggest Afrobeat song ever in England. And that was very much just me being open to it. It was actually my friend that passed away in February. He was the one that hooked that up. But I didn't know that was going to be that big. I was just like, yeah, cool. I'll do that. And I think it's a nice, I don't know if I'll do a year like this again, because it was a hell of a lot of shooting music videos and doing this. And
I saw you with Papoose.
Yeah, precisely. Well, that again, I was just like, yeah, why not? Why not? My mate, Big Nasty, was like,
yeah,
I'm doing...
y'all might have missed out, everybody who didn't ask, because he was saying yes.
In it. Well, there was a certain point where I had to like cut it off, because I think by like July, I'd committed to like 20 songs.
So, you didn't do the Rod Wave record. Where's the Rod Wave record?
We were in touch. I was in Tampa. And do you know what it was? I don't have a phone, and no one else works on email. So I was in Tampa for like 3 days, and I messaged him, but then he got back to me like a month later. So like, so we are gonna do it. But he sampled that You and I song. But yeah, it will happen. We are in touch. But
you know what's so interesting about you, Ed, and it's that's why I'm glad that you're in therapy. But I've always felt like you had a handle on what's important because you disconnect. You know what I mean? Like, you ain't been on tour in 5 years, so you disconnect between tours, you disconnect between albums. How do you know when to disconnect and when it's time for you to come back?
I think it just naturally happens. I mean, I commit to so many things, and I never really like letting people down. So I'm if I've committed to a tour, I'm going to do the tour. But then if I need space, I won't cancel a gig if I need time and space, but I will wait to the end of the tour and then like have real set time and space. So I'll just be stricter in the off times. But you guys know what it's like. Like, you really enjoy your job, and there's not really any off switch because you're always doing something.
Right.
So even when I'm off tour, I'm in studio, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing that. And
another thing you were doing was sending out some 6-foot penises.
What happened?
Now, how many people got those?
A few. I gave a few to like some like TV and radio personalities in England, because this came out ages ago. It was Elton John's 74th birthday, and he's my next door neighbor in London, and in his house.
He's your neighbor?
He is. Do you know what? I bought the house, and they went. Someone really famous.
Oh, not the one in your hometown.
No. London. Okay. London. Okay. And they go. Someone really famous lives next door to you. And I was like, who is it? And they were like, we can't say. And I just remember walking out of my house one day and just seeing him getting into a car, and I was like, all right, mate. Mad. Anyway, what was I going to say? I probably
6 foot dicks. Stuff, yeah. He was dicks. Giving out dicks.
Right. Yeah. So it was his. So in his house. He has these cock rings that Eminem got him for his wedding. Him and David had a civil partnership, and they got given diamond encrusted cock rings by Eminem. And they,
but it sounds painful. I don't know that you could put diamonds.
I mean, I've never used a cock ring, but I'm assuming diamonds. Who knows? Yeah. If it affects it. But
did you know? Did you know what they were when you saw them?
I don't know how you. I don't know whether you put it over the shaft.
Yeah,
or
you're supposed to put it.
But when you saw it, did you know what it was? When you saw it, you
were like, no, they said here are the diamond encrusted cock rings.
Okay.
Because I'd heard about them. And okay. You know, it's a rumor, but actually they exist. So it got to Elton's birthday, and he sent me like some wild stuff in the past for like my wedding and just all sorts of stuff.
Some fun things.
Just stuff that I have up in the pub, and people like look at it and go, oh. Who sent you
I never
this?
Saw no cock rings in the pub.
No, I don't have cock rings. I've got like a really... He sent me... He's really into like arty photography. So I have this really, really weird photo that... I don't really know how to explain it. It's just like... It's like a 95-year-old woman who's naked with like 7 dudes around her all naked as well. It's
have I seen... Did I see that? Was that
probably, yeah. You probably would have done, yeah.
Oh.
And anyway, so I digress. It was his birthday. And I was like, what do you get... Elton John for his birthday. So I have a friend that was a stone carver, and he'd made me a chessboard. And I said, can you make anything? And he was like, yeah, I can make anything. And I was like, can you do me a few iterations of marble penises? Like, I don't know if I need it a flaccid one, or if it's erect and veiny, or if it's like big, or maybe one's sandstone, maybe one's marble. So anyway, I got a bunch made. I chose one. I got it put on a plinth, and I got written on it, to Elton, happy birthday, you cunt. Which I'm not sure I can say that. Happy birthday, yeah. You C word. And I was like, this is brilliant. And I sent it to him, and I heard nothing. And I was like,
have I taken
it a step too far? Like, I know he's got a sense of humor, but he's also got like young kids, mm-hmm. and like, did it turn up at the house? And anyway, like a week and a half later, I get a FaceTime from him, and he's like, I love it. And anyway, he's bang into it. I got him a micro penis for his birthday this year, so like a really tiny marble one.
Mm. He gave me a great Christmas gift idea.
But then from that, like. He spoke about it in an interview, and then I spoke about it in an interview, and then all these other interviews that I was doing, people were like, well, can I have one? So I would just send them to people, and then Sam Smith came around my house. Sam was recording at a recording studio that I have nearby. Sam came around, saw one of them that I was meant to send to Elton, but I didn't, like one of the iterations, and Sam was like,
well, I want that dick.
Sam said, can I have a 6'2" one? And I was like, I guess so. I don't even know
why
the
so
cost
specific?
Of it.
That's
well, because right. Sam's 6'2".
So he wouldn't want his exact height. Look the penis in the eye.
Totally, but it's 2.5 tons. Okay. Like 2.5, do you know how heavy 2.5 tons is?
Right.
That's heavier than like a car. And you
can't
why, have
why'd you
that
make such heavy dicks, Ed?
I've found a cock carver in America. So if you guys want, if you guys want marble cocks,
yeah, just not 6'2". My
I want the contact.
No, I can make you a small one.
A small flat.
How much do they cost?
Are they flaccid or?
I mean, they range. I think the cheapest has been $5,000. I think the most expensive has been $40,000.
Let me ask you a question. You said you sent them to like personalities. Was there anybody that did like a bad review of an album or had something negative to say? So you sent it to them with a card that says "suck
thing.
My."
No, I've sent plaques to people like that before. Like, but when I got bad reviews from my first album,
mm-hmm.
I remember sending plaques to people just to let them know I was doing well.
Still sold records. Just because you sold records doesn't mean that the music was any good.
I mean, it clearly was because people like that album. So it
not
clearly,
really.
Like, do you know the thing?
Your music is good, but people do sell trash too now.
Not now. Not
you don't
now.
Think so?
No, mate. It has to be good because it's you can't fake. Well, actually, you can fake streams, can't
yeah,
you?
Yeah,
people
yeah.
are buying fake streams. No, but I mean, like, okay. So the reason that you know it's good is tickets, bums on seats. You know, mm-hmm. people coming to concerts. But what I find with albums, I released my first album, and it got like battered by the press, and everyone's like, the worst album. And then the second album comes back, that gets battered, but everyone says, it's not as good as his first album was the one.
Amazing.
And like every time I release an album, it's always the last album is like, so I released Equals and people are like, well, it's not like Divide. Divide was the, but I remember releasing Divide and it getting absolutely panned and everyone saying it wasn't as good as the one before. So I just don't believe critics anymore. Yeah. I'm like,
you believe like, people showing up shows.
Yeah,
and...
Equals is still in the top 10 in England. A year on, so people like still like it a year on, so that is what I feel like. Sometimes I release songs that you think bomb in, like I remember putting out Bad Habits and the first day streams of Bad Habits were like, to say the least, everyone at the record label was like, oh my god, but then a year on it's a hit. And yeah, that's actually how you know what a hit is. And I used to judge my worth on day one or the reviews or week one. And it's really about the long game of like what sticks around. Like Bad Habits is still in the top 50 in England. It has stuck around. Whereas on the first day, I was like, oh my God, like I've really fucked up here. But yeah. So I just don't believe it. Like when people are like, so like week one albums, always people go like, that's such an important thing. And it needs to be normalized that it's not the be all and end all. Like obviously like a week one figure is impressive, but there have been so many records that have come out that may not have had like a great week one that just stick around, and then people discover them and they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's mad to like put someone's worth on what they sell, like to just be like, this is a bad album because it's not sold this week one is like crazy, because it's whether it's a good album or like there's definitely albums that have become like I guess seminal albums of people's careers that over time went on to sell like 5 to 10 million copies that came out and probably had quite a disappointing first week. Mate, Weeknd's Blinding Lights is about to take over Shape of You as the most streamed song of all time. And I don't think that debuted at number one. I think it debuted at like 11 or 12. And then it grew and now is the biggest song of all time. So it just doesn't... just all this like focusing on day one, week one, it's just all bollocks.
Do you think about your position in the game now? Because, you know, you come out, Ed Sheeran, new guy, everybody loves you, you grow, you have tremendous success. Now you're a little older, it's artists that's, you know, that's
there's
new.
There's always the new
hot
one.
Do you think about that?
Totally, and I see it more as I see every release I do as adding to the catalogue and adding to the set list. And every album, if I have one hit on the next album, that's in the set list, but there's 29 hits in the set list and you just add new ones every time. I'm less focused on everything I do having to be... It's more about being, you know, just making great records that people like and that will make them want to go to the show, and then they go to the show and they see all the other songs that they like. And every single year of my career, I've been doing this at a high level for 12 years, but doing it sort of like full on for 15. And every year there's a new person, every year. And at the beginning, I sort of felt like I was getting replaced. Like there would be a new singer-songwriter that came out that would sell more. I remember when Sam Smith released in 2014, I was putting out Multiply and everyone was like, Sam Smith is the new blah, 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 blah. And I remember, I mean, me and Sam were mates at that point, so it never really, there was no like rivalry, but I remember feeling like, okay, my time in the sun's probably like at an end now. And then the next year, like someone else comes out, it's James Bay, it's George Ezra, it's Shawn Mendes, it's Lewis Capaldi, it's, there's like always like another one that comes in. And then you sort of realize over time, you're like, oh, like music isn't the Olympics. It's not like someone gets gold and someone doesn't. It's just everyone is doing what they love for a living, and there's plenty of space for everyone. You know, people can love my music, they can love Taylor Swift's music, they can love Harry Styles' music, they can love Coldplay's music, they can love Kendrick Lamar, they can like love Drake, and it doesn't like, and I feel like sometimes artists get it in their head that they have to be the number one, that it has to be number one. Mm-hmm. But if you're top 10 for the entirety of your career, you're fucking good. Like Coldplay have been top 10. Coldplay have never been, they've probably been the biggest band in the world, but they've never been like the number one, like over whoever, but they've always been like 3 or 7 or 5, and they've had 22 years of that. And I feel like that's a career. Like you can't be the best forever or the biggest.
You think the pop world is more fickle?
Totally, yeah, totally. The pop world is... very, but I wouldn't say, like, I know I'm a pop star, but I feel like my audience is kind of very spread across the board. Like, I'm played on alternative radio, I'm played on pop radio, I'm played on AAA or Hot AC, or like in England you have Radio 1 and Radio 2. I'm also played on Capital and then Capital Extra, and then so I'm kind of across the board. So I have pop fans, but I also have fans that are in, you know, and other genres. But I find the pop world is very much here today, gone tomorrow. And I'm 31 now, like I'm old for a pop star, like, but I when I first came out I was 18 and I was the new hot fresh young thing. And then, you know, Shawn Mendes comes out and he's 15 and that's, you're suddenly old. And
So
pop world is fickle, but that's why it's just all, it's all songs. It's, you just have to write good songs. It's not about anything other than songs. You can have like campaigns that are based around like TikTok moments or like viral campaigns or doing but if the song isn't good,
it don't matter. Yeah.
But if the song's great, it explodes. But it
helps a lot of newer artists too, or like independent artists on TikTok. All of a sudden, a song goes viral.
Well, and there's no gatekeepers really anymore. It's just you can put a song out, and it was you know, like a song like Little Yachty's Poland. It can just explode. Mm-hmm. And it's the people that make that happen. The people are like, right, this song's great. Let's make this song a... Do you like Poland?
Man, I listened to Poland for the first time this weekend, and I looked at it, I'm like, something must be wrong with my phone. Because it said it's only a minute and 20 seconds long.
I love it so much.
I mean, you can't miss with a minute, 20-second song. I'm like, does this even register? Like, if you play it, like...
But it just gets in your head. I was in the studio on Saturday with Benny Blanco, and he was like, have you heard it? And I was like, nah. And he played it to me. And the first time I heard it, I was like, I don't know what to think about this. And then it was just in my head. It just kept playing. That's what I thought too.
I was like, the more you play it, the more this that hook, whatever he's saying, it's like some melody he keeps saying over and over to Poland. And I was like, what is a wok?
I think it's codeine.
Oh.
I Googled it, and apparently the company is called like Wokford Pharma or something like that, I think.
Oh, okay.
I was like, that's what Urban Dictionary says anyway.
Now tell me about
it. Huh?
Yeah.
You looked it up?
I was like, what is a wok?
I was thinking that too. I was like, what is a wok?
Well, in England, a wok is a giant frying pan that you make. Yeah. So
it's
I was like, oh, he's making noodles. Sick.
Yeah. What is a cigarette in England?
Something you can't say here, apparently.
Do they still say that?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we do.
But not in a song.
I say it in England because it is, that's what the slang is. I would just never say it over here. But the C word in England is a term of endearment, whereas over here it is like you're getting punched up if you're saying it.
Yeah. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a term of endearment?
Yeah.
In England?
I don't understand why, like, I think of the word bitch or snake or rat or like cow or pig. Those are way more offensive than calling someone
cow
something.
Cow and pig?
If someone called a member of your family a pig or a cow versus something of the female anatomy.
A cunt.
Yeah.
That's how you say it. It's a cunt.
A rat. You know, you're a rat. You're a snake. So much more. Anyway, this is an argument I will never win because people are offended by what they're offended by. But I just...
No,
like,
I'm with you.
In England, in my generation, it is used as a term of endearment.
And it should be, right? Because I always say... Why would you call somebody something that you don't like? So over here, if you call somebody pussy, that's supposed to be a bad thing. But it's like, if you love pussy, that's not an insult if I'm calling you that.
Or if we call you a dick, is that an insult?
Yeah, totally.
But you're saying that's something people like, though. You send them out as gifts.
I'm not.
I think you're more insulted because of what dick means. Like, you're saying I'm a bad person.
I think it's like a prick. If you're like, you're a prick. Like it's
that doesn't sound so bad. Prick is like whatever.
I don't know, man. It's all context in it, and it's all how you say it, because the C word can be super offensive. I think it's super offensive if you use the T. If it's cunt, it's offensive.
Cun. So what do you say, cun?
Yeah.
Cun?
Well, in England, no one pronounces their T's, do they?
Yeah.
You know, you would call someone a chatty patty rather than a chatty patty.
Chat pat.
Chat. You know what? Another thing that here was different for us was the Queen, Queen Elizabeth's funeral. And I know there was a lot
Why was it different, though? I feel like it was huge in England.
Well, I'm talking about here.
Right.
In the United States. Like, we're like, you know, it was in the news for so long. And
you guys really care about the monkey, though.
Why, though? I don't know, but I'll be wondering why do people here?
Well, it's history. It I feel like it's historical, cultural, and... Like, someone put it to me, they were like, I would prefer to have a Queen Elizabeth than a President Truss, basically. As in,
President
like,
Truss?
Well, we've got Prime Minister Truss. Okay, as in, gotcha. Like, because every 4 or 8 years you have someone new come in. And we do have prime ministers, but our politics is absolutely mm-hmm. fucked at the moment. But there's something about having a head of state that's like comforting for people, I think. Having mm-hmm. like the Queen was there for, you know, she ruled for 70 years. And I don't know, she kind of felt like everyone's... basically, the monarchy, lots of people disagree with it and lots mm-hmm. of people love it. And it basically, I don't know, it brings tourism to our country. People like it. People...
Yeah, I didn't realize she didn't have no power. I didn't realize she was...
No. Well, I mean, she does, like, but she doesn't. Like, if she used her power, the monarchy ends, because the whole point is she can if she really wants to,
mm-hmm.
But she shouldn't.
It's more of a figurehead.
Yeah, because if she starts doing it, the reason it's like that is, like, back in, like, the 1700s or whatever, you just have, like, crazy kings that would be like, fuck this guy, I'm going to kill him.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it just turns into a dictatorship. But it's more about having... I don't really know how to... explain it, but it's about having togetherness as a country. Like when COVID happened and she mm-hmm. did a speech, the whole country tuned into the speech because it felt comforting to have her speak. I don't know how to, it sounds really weird explaining it to,
because we don't have that here at all.
Well, I don't, yeah. Were you comforted by any Trump speeches over COVID? Yeah, exactly.
No,
I was confused.
Chris Cuomo at the time, the governor.
Totally.
Not Chris Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo.
Totally, yeah. Governor Cuomo. And then I think like all the Meghan Markle controversy and everything that happened around that, we here paid attention because that was Meghan Markle. She's from here, and then there was a lot, you know, surrounding that.
Yeah, and I feel like I feel like they made a choice to not be part of it, and they want to live their life the way that they want to live, and that's their choice. I feel like it's weird people being like, if Harry wants to step away from it, he should be able to, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think it was the reasons why people were like, what's going on, you know, behind the scenes, because there is this wall
I'm
of
sure
secrecy.
We'll find out in The Crown. I'm sure we'll find out. You know, they're doing new seasons of The Crown.
I saw the picture of you and the Queen. You talked about it on Colbert?
Colbert, yeah, yeah.
You said she farted? That's why she was smiling?
No, I didn't.
Are you farting?
No.
What was it?
I was standing next to a comedian that made a joke.
Okay.
but no, the mad thing about the Queen's Jubilee is I started playing guitar watching that on TV.
Yeah.
I was 11 years old and I watched that on TV, and Eric Clapton came on and played Layla, and I was like, that's what I want to do. And then exactly 10 years later, I was on the same Jubilee playing my song to, you know, audience of England. And then 10 years later again, which was, I think, June this year, I ended up doing it again. So it's mad, like, there's mad stuff around my connection with the Jubilee and the Queen. And
it means a lot to you.
Totally, yeah, yeah. Totally. And, like, my granddad was... I come from, like, quite a odd... Like, I don't know how to explain it, but in Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland... The Queen is a very polarizing figure, and my grandfather was from Northern Ireland and my grandmother was from Southern Ireland, and they married. My grandfather was a royalist and had all these like painted plates of the Queen, and my grandmother was like not super keen on the Queen. And it's so for me, I'm when I got like given my MBE by the palace, like that means a lot to me because of the memory of my grandfather and what it would have meant to him. But it also adds like being half Irish, I don't really know how to.
Right.
There's like I feel very conflicted.
Is that one of those things that when you met the Queen, your parents were like, "Oh, Ed's really doing it. He's somebody."
They were there. They were there. I brought them down. Yeah. I think the times that have made my dad be like, "Oh, he's really doing it," was actually at the Jubilee as well. I introduced my dad to Paul McCartney, and I think that was when he was like,
"Sir Paul McCartney."
Yeah. And what's mad is Paul McCartney had seen me on, I don't really know how to, what show it would be like, but it would be like it's a show called Hollyoaks. I guess it would be like, what's that show? I don't want to wait for my life to be over. That you had over here.
Dawson's Creek.
So I guess it's like a really, really... it's like an English version of that. But like no one... like my generation would watch it. But I remember the first time I met Paul McCartney, him being like, man, I saw you on Hollyoaks. Because I played a song on Hollyoaks. And I was like, when do you watch Hollyoaks? But yeah, he watches Hollyoaks.
Wow. Now, talk to me about math, man. Why is math so important to you? Like, why do you put the math symbols or name them after all your albums?
Well, it was basically, I made 5 EPs before I was signed. I had all these songs and no record label wanted mm-hmm. to sign me. And I was waiting to be signed to release these songs. And eventually, when you've done the rounds too many times and everyone's like, no, I was like, well... I guess I should probably just release them myself. So I went on this website called TuneCore that Russ like goes on about. TuneCore's great. So I went on TuneCore and I just started releasing these EPs. And by the fifth EP, I had a plan of five. I was going to do an acoustic one, a pop one, a live one, a collaborations one, and one with the band. And I was like, by the end of that, I'll have generated a fan base and I'll be able to tour. So I released these EPs over the course of a year. And then at the end of it, the record labels were then interested. I signed, and then I had some songs left over, and I was like, well, what should I call it? And I was thinking Plus, because it's the addition onto all the other stuff that I did. And then I was like, if I do Plus, then the next album can be Multiply, because I'm going to take it worldwide and make it bigger. And then the next album was originally Divide was a double album, so it was like half R&B, half acoustic. And then I basically just jumbled them up, and that's what Divide is. And then there's Equals, mm-hmm. which was meant to be the final of the five, which was meant to be the end of the equation of all the genres in one. And then there's the one that I'm bringing out in next year, basically.
What's that one called?
I've actually never confirmed the name of it, but it's called Subtract, and that's going to be the last.
I think we figured that out.
No, and well, lots of people think it's called Minus.
I know. Okay.
No, but it's called Subtract.
It could have been squared.
Yeah, but then after that, technically the five mathematicals. I've got like other ideas for stuff, but that was, I mean, that's been 12 years of my career of doing that. But it's also just on a marketing point of view, I wanted to have each album. Like, I loved whenever you Coldplay release an album, you like know that they release an album. Even if you see a poster of just like the artwork, you're mm-hmm. like, oh, Coldplay releasing. And I wanted to just do it simply colors, like block colors. So the first album is orange and it has a white plus symbol. And if you saw orange and a white plus symbol, you'd be like, okay, that's Ed's album. The next one was bright green with a black multiply. And then it was bright blue with a divide sign. And it was bright red with an equal sign. And I love the idea of like never having my name or face on anything. And it's just, you see a billboard of whatever, a mm-hmm. red equal sign, you go, oh, Ed's releasing an album. Rather than, I never really liked the way I looked, so I didn't really want to be in music. If you look at all my first music videos, I'm not in any of them. And I didn't want to be on album covers, you know, sort of like in my leather jacket looking like this. You know, so
you like how you look now?
I mean, I exercise a lot. So yeah, I'm prone to be, I like food and I like alcohol, so I'm prone to being fat. So I exercise a lot now to balance that out, because I still love eating food.
Yeah. I think it's good if you get finer as you get older.
I definitely feel that that's the case. I feel like when I got my eyes lasered, that was when people were like, oh, hey, you don't look like shit.
What did the eyes lasering do? Did it make it?
Well, I just stopped wearing glasses.
Oh, got you.
But I wore glasses because I didn't like the way I looked. So I'd wear these big glasses and I felt like it was like the protection.
Covering your face.
Yeah, I felt like that. Or I'd wear like a hat and glasses and stuff. So I'm a bit more comfortable. It's since working out, like I do a lot of running, a lot of weights, and eating kind of well. It's the wine that gets me, though. Mm-hmm. It's the wine that wine, because I'll have like a bottle of wine a day, and that adds up.
So basically, you no beer, no. I know you stopped.
No,
beer.
I've got beer. Okay. I stopped drinking spirits. Yeah, okay. Spirits were my like trigger to all the other stuff. Yeah.
Now about the Mathematic tour, are you going to only be doing songs from those albums, like the Math albums?
Kind of, yeah, kind of. So it's sort of like a great. I hate saying greatest hits because it makes me sound like a like I'm a heritage artist. But it's the greatest hits of those. What will be the next album will come out before I'm in the States. So it'll be essentially the greatest hits. But there's like a part of the show where it's like the medley of the mm-hmm. collaborations, you know. And I'll do Fireboy DML Peru, and I'll do Beautiful mm-hmm. People Khalid, and I'll do the Justin Bieber song, and you know, it's a wide variety. When I look at live shows, I'm sort of like, if I were to go and watch Coldplay and they didn't play Yellow, mm-hmm. I feel shortchanged. I feel short. That's why, sometimes you want artists to go and do like medleys of, you see, like I went to go and see Drake in like 2013, and there was like a 15-minute medley of him just doing
guest appearances.
Yeah, all his features. Yeah. And it's fucking great. You're just like, because you get that excitement of the song, and then it's the next one. So I think that that's important to do, of just giving the audience everything that they want.
Yeah, some people get sick of performing certain songs because they were so big.
But then don't
play. I've
heard
artists say that before.
But then don't play.
Like, but then the audience gets so disappointed.
But the thing is, like, there's definitely songs that I play that I'm like, this isn't my favorite song anymore. But when you see the reaction of it, you're playing it for someone that has paid money to see you play that song. So play that song.
Would you perform at Robert Kraft's wedding?
But do you know what was mad about that? Is everyone always wants me to play perfect at their wedding, and I've never done it because I usually play on weekends or I'm with my family, and I don't want to do anything on the weekend.
You've never done perfect at a wedding, and that is the perfect wedding.
And when
song.
I was playing it at Robert Crofts, because he asked me just to play perfect, so when I was playing it, I was like, "Oh, this is the first time I've played it." Yeah.
What?
Yeah, mad. It's fun. It was a fun wedding, though. Elton John was my opening act. He played just before me. And then, like, Meek came on stage, and it was good. I met, like...
Do y'all get paid for that?
No, that was, like, I'm doing a show for him. So we're doing, like, Gillette Stadium and stuff like that. So that was more
it was
of
a little
he was
bonus.
My he was my first stadium in the States.
Oh, got you.
Do you get a seat at the table and, like, a plate and everything?
No, but they did get me some food. I was basically... I was basically late there. Like, I'm not... He had his closest like mates there, and I'm not that. We're close. He was my first ever stadium in the States. But I'm very much like in terms of like private gigs, I don't really do them that much. Mm-hmm. It has to be like I'm playing the Formula One next weekend, but that's because we're not doing Austin on the tour, and I wanted to make sure we did. Or was the last private I did was in Hawaii, and it was because I wanted to go to Hawaii.
Yeah.
But I'm I like playing my own shows, to be honest. I like just, yeah.
So when Elton John opens up for you, right, do you ever look and say to yourself, I really got to step up my rider and everything else? Because I know Elton gets everything.
He gets a good rider. What was mad, though, is I was chatting to Meek while Elton was on stage. Mm-hmm. And we were like here and Elton's there playing to like 100 people. And then I stopped the conversation. And I was like, Meek, isn't it mad that we're like, talking over Elton John playing an intimate gig like this is like do you ever think that you'd ever be in a position where like this is normal because it just became normal but yeah no my rider
it sounds to me like you were trying to tell me shut the fuck up I'm trying to listen to Elton sounds to me like you were trying to get out the conversation
no I love Meek I really really love Meek.
What if Elton would have been like guys can you stop talking about for me
shut up
my rider is usually just a nice bottle of wine usually just a, like that's kind of all I would want to have at a gig. So I usually just say this bottle of wine because I feel like if you ask for one thing, they're mm-hmm. going to get it.
Yeah.
My rider used to be, do you know the rumor about Madonna getting only blue M&Ms?
I thought
I've heard
Mariah.
That about Mariah.
I've heard that about a few people.
So do you know why people do that?
Wow.
So tour managers do that because they have a very extensive rider mm-hmm. of like very, very specific things. Of it has to be this kind of tea and it has to be this kind of water and blah, blah, blah. And then they say all blue M&Ms because if it's all blue M&Ms, they walk into the dressing room, they see all blue M&Ms and they go, right, you've got everything we need in this rider and I don't need to double check it. Like,
wow.
I just thought it was a diva thing, but it's basically they walk in and they know that everything has been followed to the tea, basically.
Wow.
Fascinating, now, isn't it?
I saw people not congratulating you, but they were bigging you up because you kept the ticket prices reasonable.
Yeah.
Are you doing that because you're aware of how the economy is now across the world?
I used to go to gigs as a kid, and the tickets that I bought, I could always afford, and I could mm-hmm. go with my friends. And I don't want to, like, without sounding crass, like, what is the extra money going to do for my life? Mm-hmm. Like, I would rather play sold out gigs everywhere in the world than have an extra X amount of whatever. And like, I don't know. I know how much my show costs and I know how much I kind of want to walk away with. And after that, I'm sort of fine with it.
And I'm sure your merch does amazing too.
Totally. Yeah. And you know, and people coming to the gigs, like this isn't going to be the last time I tour. You want
That's
repeat
right.
business. You want people being like, do you know what? I went to that show with all of my mates and we had a great time and we'll go next time. And people, this is what I've done for my entire career is just like make tickets reasonable and affordable and they will come. And my last tour was the biggest selling tour in the world and the highest grossing as well. So we still made mm-hmm. good money and everyone came to the gig. So I'm just, you know, I don't believe in the platinum seats and the mm-hmm. VIP areas and the sold meet and greets. Like we do partnerships with radio stations for meet and greets and it's always free and it's always competition. So fans actually enter the competitions. They're excited to go. They don't feel like they're parting with money to meet you and feel cheated out of it. And there's just ways that I like to do it and it's always worked. So I'm not going to change it.
Have you seen the pictures from Chris Brown's meet and greets?
No, I haven't, no.
Oh, okay. Take a look at that when you get a chance. They're pretty funny.
I just, you know, there's like different strokes for different folks, you know, but my rule has always been this and it's worked incredibly well. So I'm not going to start doing something that I don't believe in now. And I feel like it's I hate going, we would always keep the front row of arenas and then go to the nosebleed seats and get the back row and put them in the front row, because then you've got the best fans who are having the best night right in front of you. Whereas opposed to, I've played a couple of like casinos where they control the front row and half of it's empty and the other half are like high rollers that don't really want to be there, and you're just playing to people that are just rich and don't give a fuck, and like you much rather play to your fans.
You said something just now about doing, not wanting to do things that you don't believe in. How hard is it not to be a clout chaser in 2022? Because I know people probably come to you and be like, you know, Ed, well, this person's doing this and this person's doing that. Maybe you should try to do this type of record, or maybe you should take a picture doing this. And
totally. Well, I mean, TikTok is that. Like, I never really understood TikTok, but TikTok controls songs now, really. So I basically, there's a team in the UK that come to me and they go, well, these are the trends, and I'll go, well, this is quite funny and this is quite funny, and I'll just choose the things that I want to do. So I guess that is kind of chasing clout, but it's essentially, that's how you advertise your music now, and if you don't do that, it's a lot more difficult to like advertise something, and I don't want to make a song and for it to be completely ignored. So
it's a fine line between marketing and clout chasing.
Totally, yeah, totally. And in terms of like genres, like I love spanning all genres. I like trying different things. I like making like anything. I've sung in Italian, I've sung in French, I've sung in Japanese. I'm up for trying anything. But I think you have to walk into something with a somewhat knowledge of it and respect of it, rather than just being like, oh, that's the hot thing, I'm going to do that. So when I first made Afrobeat, I moved to Ghana and lived there for a month and like made a lot of music that wasn't just my music. I made music that went on other people's projects and stuff. And
how was that experience living in Ghana for
amazing.
A month?
So good.
Did you
so
go
good.
To like the Door No Return and all of that stuff?
We
the slave castles?
No, we went to the guy that I went with, Fuse ODG. He had a house there, and he had a studio in his house. And I mean, we went out and about, but like not like hugely. We would go for runs and stuff like that. But what the thing I loved about it is you'd be in the studio all day making these songs, and then a phone call would be made, 200 people would turn up to the house, and then you'd have a party to the songs.
Yeah.
So you'd like make these songs knowing that you were going to party to them that night, and it was such a different vibe. And also for me, I'm like a not a secretive person with my music, but I don't want it like leaking years before it comes out and phones are out and everyone's filming. It's just the culture there is just like sharing, and just it's great. Yeah, really, really, really good fun.
The nightlife is crazy. So with that said, do you have a hard time just selling music nowadays? And what I mean by that is people want your life.
Totally.
They want to know about the wife and the kids. I just want to give them the music.
It's an odd line, isn't it? Because I think kids are always off the table. Mm-hmm. Like there's no point with that. But it's interesting with my life with Cherry, because the songs are about it. So there's obviously interest in it. And you know, we're shooting a documentary at the moment around my life, and there was a big conversation about what do we include. And I think that as long as it's honest and it links in with a theme of something that's in a song, like there's no point putting something in if it is just detrimental to your life, I think. But yeah, it's definitely, there's a fine line, isn't it? Because we're all public figures. Everyone's interested in what you talk about your personal life on the radio. You talk about your personal life on the radio. Therefore, you've somewhat opened the door. But then there's also this
boundary
preaching privacy of being like, oh, actually I'm a human being, that sometimes people forget. So yeah, it's a very fine line. But that's why I, like, you've been to my house in Suffolk, like that's why I live where I live, and I don't live in Los Angeles, and I don't my life as a celebrity is switched on when it needs to be switched on. So I come to New York and I'm working this week, so I'm doing the TVs and I'm doing the radios, and I'm a celebrity for the week. But when I go home, I'm a friend, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, I'm a son. And that's my, like, you can't bring celebrity baggage into a pub in Suffolk. You just have to be yourself.
Well, what if the pub is in your yard?
Well,
right,
I mean,
next
that,
to your house.
Like. Yeah, I mean, that is, do you know, actually, since you came and then basically the pandemic happened, that pub hasn't really been properly used as a pub.
What?
Yeah, it's weird. Like the kind of way of hanging out, I don't know if it's changed here, but the way of hanging out in England is very different. It's not like 20 people go to, I'll meet up with like a mate and go to a pub, but it used to just be a bit more free, I feel.
I would think that that would be the place everybody would have came to hang out during the pandemic. Because y'all are in your little bubble right there.
I don't know how it was here, but like it was very much people were trying to catch you out. So like
Being irresponsible.
Yeah, so like a neighbor of someone might tell the press of, you know, someone coming around.
And then you have kids and a family too. And I think you have to be more responsible when you have that.
We didn't have a kid for the first half. Cherry was pregnant for the first half. Mm-hmm. But that's how we kept it so quiet. No one knew she was pregnant. Yeah. But then the second one was mad because Cherry was pregnant whilst I was promoting Equals. And we went to like award shows with her massive bump and no one picked up on it. And then the week we gave birth, everyone found out.
It's kind of impolite to be like, is she? Because what if she's not? You know what I mean?
I don't know. It was like a proper bump. It was a proper bump. But yeah.
Are you doing the tour just to get out the house? Be honest.
Well, no, they come with me.
Oh, you're taking them on the road? Yeah, okay.
They come. So I've been on tour for the entire year. I started touring in April. And we have just been renting houses. So we lived in like Dublin for a week. We lived in Limerick for a week. We lived in Frankfurt for a week. And yeah, it's fun. Lots of zoos. Been to lots of zoos with the kids. And it's great. You know, it's great for my daughter. My daughter comes to the shows and watches the gigs. She sort of assumes that everyone else's dad sings as well, though.
So, where's your dad sing?
Yeah, well, and also she assumes that every single song ever is mine. So she'll hear something and she'll be like, oh, it's daddy singing. It's like, no, that's like the Beatles or something like that, you know?
What about this Pokemon, the Celestial song? Do your kids care about that?
She hasn't really got to Pokemon stage yet, but I care about that. Like, I love Pokemon.
Yeah, you're a Pokemon guy.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Pokemon was my escape as a kid. I didn't really have a fun time at primary school. When I was like 6, 7, 8, and that's when Pokemon came out, and it was my escape into a world. I think that's why I love Harry Potter so much. You escape into a world where you can sort of exist in your mind, and I would play Pokemon as that escape. And then you get older, and then it's comforting to go back and play the game, and then suddenly I'm in Japan, and I meet the head of Pokemon, and he's like, you should do a song for us. And I'm like, I don't even know what that sounds like. Like, what does a song for Pokemon sound like? And then we ended up doing it. My favorite thing about the music video was because it's all green screen and they draw in the Pokemons. I'm sitting there at a breakfast that they've set up and they're putting food on the table. And it's basically, there was about 20 people from the Japanese Pokemon company, like branch there, making sure it's all done. And they've got a Japanese director and they've got an English translator. And I'm there sort of eating the food. And then you just see this kind of huddle and they're all talking like really, really seriously. And I say to the translator, I was like, what's going on? And he's like, they're not sure whether Pikachu eats eggs or not. And I was like, okay.
What?
And they're like, they said they've got to do a conference call to Japan right now. So they all go in and they put this Zoom on and you see them all like really seriously like looking and like nodding. And I'm kind of like, oh fuck, this is like proper serious. And then they come back in and everything resumes and we go back to, and I say the translator and I was like, so does Pikachu eat eggs? And the translator's like, he doesn't. It was like super serious.
How the hell would they know that?
Well, because it's a world that they've created, they have to take it so seriously. Yeah. So I did a TikTok for them where I got something wrong and I had to take it down. But it is really super serious.
What
to
did
them.
You
is
get there, wrong?
You know, it's the biggest selling franchise ever.
Pokemon?
Ever.
Wow.
Ever. Over like Harry Potter, over Star Wars, over like any Disney film. Yeah. It's like 117 billion generated or something like that. It's complete.
Remember when they had that game, everybody was walking around.
Oh yeah, Pokemon Go. I never got into that. That was a step too far for me.
Is your toy collection worth anything? Don't you got a Pokemon plush toy collection?
Oh, I don't know if they're worth anything. I don't know. Yeah, I just get like, whenever I go to Japan, they send me one. So I'm like, Japan used to be the one place that I could go and blend in because like no one liked my music there. Mm-hmm. Basically I would tour there and play to no one. So when I went traveling, I took my wife there and we traveled around Japan. No one said anything. And then Shape of You came out and it just ended all of that. So much so that they won't even let me promote new music there. I'll go and I'll be like, can I play Bad Habits? And they're like, no, you need to play Shape of You.
Play Shape of You.
It's like number one for like 3 years there. It's insane.
And you said you didn't get into Pokemon Go. Why?
I just didn't like it as a game. It's not. I want to be in the Pokemon world. I don't want to exist in this world catching Pokemon. This world sucks at times. I want to be in Kanto.
And plus, you don't have a phone, so.
No, but you could play it on an iPad. But can you imagine seeing a ginger kid with glasses walking around with an iPad trying to catch Pokemon?
Yeah.
Looks pretty on brand to me. Ginger kid with eyeglasses playing Pokemon. That sounds pretty on brand to me, guys.
This is so super awesome, wicked cool.
I got a Snorlax.
So can we expect a new album? You said Subtract is coming.
Yeah, Subtract is coming. There's a new album, and then there's new music. I'm basically like, I'm in the most creative part of my life, I feel, because mm-hmm. I've the pressure of every album having to be this like gargantuan pop machine is off. I feel like that I've had five of them now, and I feel like now is the time to actually explore doing stuff and taking risks and just be like, well, because I'm going to be on a stadium tour for 5 years, so even if I put out an album and it bombs, I'm still playing to 92,000 people that night. You know, I don't feel the pressure of it.
You're going on tour for the next 5 years?
Including this year, yeah, we finish in 2026.
Wow.
That's amazing. So new album comes out beginning of the year, then a North American tour starts in March?
I've got Australia in January and February.
Okay.
And then America starts in April. And then after then, we're going to hit other countries. And then we go back to... No, I think we do Asia in 24. And then we go back to Europe. And then we do all the fun countries. So the ones that... 2009 was my fun country tour, where it's like, fuck it, let's play in Iceland. And you go and play in Iceland to like 1 in 5 people, and you play in Romania, and you play in, like, I really want to play Egypt. Like, there's a venue in front of the pyramids that I really, really, really want to play. So I hope that works out. But that's the year of doing that. My manager will be listening to this being like, why are you telling all the plans? But this is the only tour we're doing in America. We're not coming back to America. This is it.
And Khalid and Russ are...
Well, Khalid's going to do some dates. Russ going to do some dates. We've got Cat Burns. We've got Maisie. We've got Dylan. I think Griff's doing some. And it's going to be good. The Khalid thing's like really cool because he's got about as many... I think he's got 10 billion streaming songs, and I've got 10 billion streaming songs. So you come to a show and you're going to see 20... billion streamers in the space of like 3 hours, which I find quite cool. And it'd be great. Me and Russ still haven't played that the tune that we've done together, so I'm really excited to play that.
Your kids are going to be so well rounded, man, and so well traveled.
Lyra's been to 25 countries already.
Wow.
It's wild. Yeah, it's wild. But I think it's important to see. Well, I grew up in the countryside, so when I first moved to London at 17, I remember being like, oh my God, like the world is not what I thought it was. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for, like, when we tour South America, I want Lyra to see everything, you know, not just like a really lovely hotel or whatever. I want her to travel around, see, like, go to the rainforest and see shit, you know?
All right. It's my guy, Ed Sheeran, man. Ed, thank you for coming, brother.
Yeah, thanks for always stopping by to see us. Yeah, I know you don't have to, but it's nice.
I love
that
it.
You do.
I love it. It's always, it's always the best interview of the day for me. I love it.
And man, let me ask you, who you fucking with musically right now? Hip hop or otherwise?
Do you know what? There's a song in the UK. Is it Sonnet and Quams? Is it Quams? Yeah. Called Yeah 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 that I'm like got on repeat. What else? I mean, it's a lot of UK music. I mean, I do listen to a lot of American music, but UK music is so my. I'm just around it all the whole time. Stormzy's released a new song called Hide and Seek that's like the most fucking beautiful song of it. You should listen
to it.
Listen to
it. Salute to Stormzy.
Yeah, it's so good. I mean, there's a bunch. I mentioned One Cuz last time I was here, who's a Swedish rapper, but he's just about to release a new record that's really, really good as well. But like, I'm just, as I tour around, I'm listening to stuff. What else? I bought something the other day. Oh, do you listen to D Block Europe?
D Block Europe.
So basically, D Block Europe is is that that's Jadakiss, right?
Yeah, Jadakiss Styles and Chic. Yeah.
So they set up D Block Europe maybe like 10, 15 years ago, but now they're an act in their own right. They're like arena level selling act. But I just did a feature on their record that is great. So go and check that out as well.
Okay. All right, it's my man Ed Sheeran. It's the Breakfast Club. D Block Europe. I never heard of D Block Europe.
Yeah, man, they're like.
I remember Dipset had their Europe arm too. Remember that, Dipset?
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah, they fucking did. I knew those guys as well. Yeah.
I don't know what happened with that.
Well, D Block Europe, they sold like 302s. They're like doing full arena tours across.
Yeah, I wonder why they don't ever talk about it.
You should definitely check them out though, man. They're like the same level as like Dave and Stormzy and J-House in terms of like people. Like,
check them out.
They sold out the equivalent of the Garden.
Give her back her charger.
London. They're big.
D Block Europe.
Yeah.
I gotta check them out. When you leave?
You stopped, so you did play.
I think I'm going to Austin. So what? I leave. I'm here. What am I doing tomorrow?
I just had to see what the whole hype was about.
Yeah, I got on late.
I'm here. I'm basically here.
I got on like super late. Like 4 years ago late. I didn't even play with his puppet.
I needed that.
Yeah, I think he's a cool dude.
Huh?
I think he's a cool dude.
I feel like I'm heavy, yo. Yeah. Like a picture. I don't know. Nothing. Oh, you gonna pick?
I already got one with him. I'm gonna check it out.
Oh, already got one.
I
These questions are hilarious.
You said what?
No, these questions are funny. No, they're just funny.
Oh, I wrote them.
Like, but hey, you're bisexual, so.
I'll try to word it better.
Can we get the track listing too from the?
I think I put
it. Oh, it is on here. Yeah. Yeah, what's going on with the Daily Paper interview?
I heard about it.
Oh, okay. When is it playing?
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everyone. It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival. And we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350 plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.